Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks for stopping by the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy. On the day of the U.S.-Canada game, the FIL World Championship opening ceremonies, and a reunion of one of field lacrosse, international lacrosse's biggest rivalries, the U.S. versus Canada, I am talking with a Canadian lacrosse expert, Isle Indoor's Brian Shanahan, about what this game entails and what we can potentially take away from both teams. Looking forward to tonight's game at 9 p.m. on ESPN2. Shani, thanks a lot for joining me on the podcast.
Oh, thanks very much, Terry. It's good to be here.
So I suppose just to kind of dive right in, I'm very interested in this Canadian team. You know, there are some things about this squad that are very familiar. There are others that are very new. And, you know, let's start at the top because, you know, Randy Mierens is a coach who's been around this program for a long time, was an assistant in 2010. But, you know, his taking over the reins, you know, after Dave Huntley had been, you know, kind of calling the shots for the previous two championships and been around the program a long time himself, is an interesting development. And I suppose, you know, Randy being the coach at Canisius is somebody that, you know, some American lacrosse fans are, you know, kind of familiar with. But, you know, if you were going to kind of talk about him, his style, and what you might expect to see from a team that he puts together, you know, where would you start?
Well, I'd say right off the top, he's a real players coach, and he's been around for quite a while. In fact, he was also with the team back in 2006 when they won the gold medal. So, and he's not that much unlike Dave Huntley, who is also a real players coach. But, you know, Randy's a real student of the game. He has been for a long time. I played many years with him back in box across Canada, won 5-man cups with him. He was the captain of the team for many of those teams. He's one of those guys who's always got an infectious positive attitude, always expects to win, demands the same kind of feeling from, as a player, he demanded from his teammates when, you know, he's our captain. And, and he'll be the same way as a coach. But I also think he will empower his assistant coaches. He's a smart guy, and he knows he's got a couple of smart guys, and, you know, Matt Brown and Taylor Ray. So, you know, those guys will be running the shots, you know, offensively and defensively. And that's, you know, one of the things about Randy as well. Like, there's no ego involved. He knows that he's got some smart guys that can do a lot of good things. And you know, I spoke with Stu Brown is a guy who was involved very much with Team Canada for many years. He's off this year. So he worked with Randy and all those guys, and he said he was so impressed with how hard these guys work, you know, analyzing tape. And he says, you know, the players might end a game at 9 or 10 o'clock. He says those guys are up until 2 in the morning going, you know, over videotape and all that. And, you know, this is all three of the guys. You know, I expect this to be a great coaching staff, and because he's been around for so long, it's an easy transition. It's not like a new face. You know, he's been there for a while.
It's interesting to me because I think that when you looked at 2006, there was an idea that, you know, this was very much a Canadian national team in the way that it was predominantly a box-infused group playing field lacrosse in 2010, and then even more so this year. I think that it's been more of the formal transition into a outdoor program. So from the, you know, coaches.
No, you're absolutely right about that, Terry. I mean, I remember back in 2006, there were still a few guys who, you know, didn't really play a whole lot of field lacrosse. You know, guys like Colin Doyle, who is a legend in box lacrosse, you know, was playing midfield on that team. And a number of guys like him who were basically box lacrosse players with great lacrosse IQs, but, you know, they couldn't run up and down the field the same way most midfielders do in this kind of tournament. But, you know, Canada made the most of it. They actually played some guys with a little bit of offense, defense, and they, you know, got away with it by making good changes off the bench. But this is probably the first year where you could say, right on down the line, every midfielder is a guy with a lot of, you know, D1 NCAA experience with the best speed I've ever seen on a Team Canada team in the midfield, because that always used to be what they said was our weakness. We, you know, we had great finish. You know, we had some superstars in the back end, you know, like Brody Merrill, but they said the midfield was our weakness. We just didn't have the athletes, the sprinting, you know, we always said the Americans were like sprinters on the midfield, and we didn't have the same speed as them. This year it's different. I mean, you got so many guys on the midfield that can, run back and forth and play both ends of the field really strong. And then you even got a few, guys like, a guy like David Earl, who I really think of as an American. Obviously, he's got some Canadian roots. He grew up in the States, but, he's a guy who played with the Hamilton Nationals. So he played with all the Canadians, but he's also got, the American training. And I think there's a couple of guys like that on the team, but even all the Canadian players who grew up playing all their lacrosse in Canada until they went down the States, that especially in the midfield, there is more depth and more of a training in field lacrosse than we've ever seen.
And it's true on the coaching staff as well. I mean, you mentioned Taylor Ray. He's coming off of one of St. Joe's best seasons ever, going 11-4. And, Matt Brown is probably one of the hottest assistant coach candidates on the market, having been to the Final Four, I believe, 3 times in the last 5 years with Denver. It's just it's an amazing assembly of, talent and minds. And I think the next, kind of point that I want to move to is you mentioned Brody Merrill and the stalwart rock that he's been for the defensive end of the field, since coming out of Georgetown in 2005. And one of the things that I'm interested in your perspective on his role is the way in which maybe it changed a little bit with the news that John Gray wouldn't be participating in this tournament as a player as a result of, his denied appeal, on the basis of his therapeutic use of, what has been deemed performance enhancing drugs and what it means for Brody, who I think has a reputation throughout the sport as being, one of the best guys, for sure. Very few people dispute it. But for those that have played with him, he certainly is intense. He brings that same level of competitiveness that you get from any top-tier player. And as a leader, I think he's the type of amalgam of those two entities that is so easy and nice to play around. But without Junior, what type of role do you think he needs to play in terms of the on-field leadership component of this team?
Well, there's no question that when you look for leadership on this team, the first guy you think of is Brody Merrill, and he is the undisputable leader of this team. But as you said, he's also a great team guy, and they will look to him for their leadership on and off the field, and not just on. I actually think his role on the field might be diminished a little bit, only because they don't want him. They probably don't need him doing as much. Kyle Rubish will be the shutdown defender, and he's probably a very underrated guy as far as, from Americans knowing him, but in Canada he's been the top defender in indoor lacrosse for many years, and he'll be the shutdown guy, and that frees up Brody, and we know Brody does best is scooping up those ground balls and running up the field, but he'll also have a little bit of help as well from, guys like Dylan Roy and Jason Noble. So I think it takes a little bit of weight off Brody's shoulders, and I think that fact alone will enable him to have a great tournament. And who knows, this might be the last time, if it's not the last time he'll play for Team Canada World Championships. We're getting closer, he's getting older, but I still think you will see Brody Merrill, on most of the face off, scooping up loose balls, carrying it into the offense. But I think that they're going to try to, make sure they save his legs for the whole tournament. I mean, there's been times, some years between his box lacrosse, the field lacrosse, for Team Canada and the MLL. I'm shocked that he hasn't died of exhaustion from all the lacrosse he plays, and he probably plays more than, any Canadian player there is. They will miss John Grant, I think, in some ways. That frees up the rest of the offense, and it's a shame that we're not going to see John Grant, and that the last World Championships was probably his, the last time we saw him, and we didn't know it. But I think it'll probably, some people said it might actually turn out to be a positive thing, because sometimes teammates of John Grant stand back and watch too much. He's just so fantastic, and he plays the one-on-one game so well, and but the thing is, when it's not working for him, sometimes the offense is standing around a bit too much. Sometimes younger players are a bit too intimidated. They want to give him the ball all the time. But I think you're going to see on this Team Canada this year that the attack guys will be more straight finishers as opposed to Dodgers, and you're going to see that, you know, the ball, you know, the quarterbacks will be the midfielders, guys like Kevin Crowley, you know, and Jordan Hall, and the, you know, the attack guys will be, you know, you'll mostly see it in their stick and in the net. So it will change the offense a bit, but, you know, you mentioned Matt Brown. I think he's got some schemes done up for these guys that I think the offense will be just as dangerous as you've always expected Canadian offense to be. You know, we will miss the fantastic like real goals from John Grant, but I don't think it'll hurt Canada in the long run.
Well, it's interesting to me because, you know, one of the things that people talk about when they talk about Brownie's offense at Denver is how reliant it is on that X attackman that's able to move the ball from one side of the field through to the other, you know, at X. So, you know, in the past it had been Alex Demopoulos. Last year we saw Eric Law, who has, you know, emerged as a really nice outdoor player in the MLL. And then this year a transfer, Jack Bobzian, you know, just a sophomore, was able to fill that role pretty nicely. And I think that what this will show is a test of some creativity. But the point that you've made that I think is completely on and I think shouldn't be overlooked is how dangerous some of these midfielders are as feeders. And one of the things I'm interested in your perspective on is that when you look around the MLL, there are very few guys that can do this, that can actually dodge into the teeth of the defense and move the ball effectively to a finisher for a good shot. It's much more frequently that they're on the run, you know, drawing a slide, throwing a relatively difficult pass through two guys. And this is a little bit more theoretical than it is related to, you know, any particular personnel involved in this game. But what about the indoor game do you attribute that skill to? Because, you know, is it the nature of, like, there's forwards and defensive players, there isn't necessarily midfielders? And how does a guy like Kevin Crowley play indoor that has allowed him to transition to being a top-down dodger, but still able to move the ball effectively in a way that maybe Canada can get away without having that X attackman?
Well, I think, you know, in the indoor game, and you know, it's just all take quarters and stick work short passes, and I think there is just a comfort level for making passes around a crowd. You know, you see a stick open, and you want to make that pass. And I think that translates well, and you know, for us, for Canadians in the field across. And this is, you know, at times where it looks like you shouldn't be making the pass, that, you know, the Canadians will. And you know, I remember Dave Huntley told me back in one of the previous World Championships, he says, you know, if there's a criticism about Canadians in their game, field across game, it was that we overpass and undershoot. Like we, you know, where the Americans want to shoot from everywhere and the Canadians don't want to shoot unless it's a good opportunity, but they will pass through a crowd all the time. But, you know, it may look dangerous at times, but when you've got some guys that have great sticks in tight, it's not quite as dangerous. In fact, it gives you an advantage that they can see things that might look like a dangerous pass from, you know, traditional field lacrosse players. So, you know, and I think that's why, you know, even now you hear from a lot from the Americans' perspective is getting, you know, Americans up to play some box across to improve their game. And you know, of course, you see a lot of, you know, teams in the NCAA with the Canadian influence and trying to take advantage of that. But I really think that it's just our game of box lacrosse that makes it a lot more comfortable for these guys to play inside short passes and, you know, quick sticks and very comfortable with their sticks. And, you know, and even maybe even more so now that, you know, the Canadian box lacrosse game has evolved into a really offense defense game. It hasn't always been like that, where you've got so many offensive specialists on the floor who pretty much play 80% of the offense in the box game, and then, you know, they step onto the field and field lacrosse and very comfortable in that role.
It's interesting to me because, you know, I think that to your point about how, from a skills development standpoint, there's nobody, in my opinion, that's better at this skill, no American midfielder, than Joe Walters. And he's a guy who, you know, at one point was a pretty pure lefty shooter as an attackman. And his transition, and I attribute it in large part to, you know, what he's been able to do with the Nighthawks, has been essential. And it'll be interesting to me because there isn't really a American midfielder who will provide that type of break you down in a very condensed way in the middle of the defense without having to run out of trouble with the ball still in his stick.
No, I think you're absolutely right with Joe Walters. I'm actually shocked that he had made the team. I mean, he played the team for Team USA as a young guy in 2006 and has not made it since. And you know, you think he'd know Canadian players probably better than any other American from, playing up in Hamilton and playing box lacrosse for Rochester and even playing in the Man Cup up in Brampton. So I do agree with you on what you say about Joe Walters.
Let's move back to the defensive end for a second, because I think that one of the things that's going to be interesting about this American team is the role that Kevin Lavelle plays, because in so many ways he is that inside finisher that emulates what a lot of Canadians have the role that a lot of Canadians have filled for a lot of American college teams. And I think that that's a well-known fact. Kevin Lavelle is there to be around the crease, find space, catch everything that's thrown to him, and get a high percentage of those feeds into the back of the net. And one of the things that is such an important task for coaches like Dave Petromala, the U.S. team defensive coordinator, is preparing for that from opponents and figuring out ways to make sure that the inside finisher doesn't get those catch and shoot opportunities. How good do you think the Canada will be at defending that when Kevin Lavelle is on the field? And are there any guys that you feel like that's particularly within their skill set to be able to defend the interior finisher?
Yeah, I think that role will probably fall to Kyle Rubish. I mean, Kyle Rubish, is just a fantastic shutdown man. And I go again to Stu Brown, the guy I was chatting with him yesterday about Team Canada, and I don't know if I just mentioned that he also was an assistant manager for Hamilton Nationals for many years. And in his opinion, Kyle Rubish, he thinks is the best shutdown defender even in the MLL, even though he hasn't played a ton of MLL. And he's just a big, strong guy with a defensive mind that, in the NLL, in the indoor game, he has been named the Defensive Player of the Year 3 years in a row. So that'll be his job, to shut down the guys, and I think they'll definitely put him on. And, of course, it helps having guys, athletic, young guys, like Jason Noble, who's, from what I've been told, he's looked fantastic so far. Dylan Roy, I don't know much about Dylan Roy. I think he's another one of these Americans who, he's from Denver, but he obviously must have some Canadian roots. I was reading one article about him. He said, growing up in Colorado, he was such a hockey fan that he told everybody that Patrick Roy, the goaltender for Colorado, was his cousin. Roy is the French way to, pronounce Roy. So I don't know where he gets his Canadian roots, but I've also been told that he's looked very strong out there, going up a lot of loose balls, doing them. Of course, you got Brody Merrill, and then Matt Vince is coming back again for, I think, his third championship. So I think, the defense will be very strong, athletic, a few athletic young guys. But Kyle Rubish will be the shutdown guy, and I think a lot of Americans will be surprised at how good he is, because he hasn't played a ton in the MLL.
From what you've seen of Cam Holding and Jesse Gamble in the NLL, what can you tell American fans who are relatively unfamiliar with those two?
I know of Jesse Gamble a lot more than Cam Holding. Cam Holding played for Colorado in the NLL. I didn't see a lot of him, but I've seen a ton of Jesse Gamble, and I've been told that they play a very similar game. These are guys who are just athletic, fast, great short stick defenders. I mean, they primarily play a defensive role in the NLL, but they've both got great transitional skills. In fact, Jesse Gamble originally went to Cornell, I believe, as an attack man, but he had some injury problems. But in the indoor league, he's turned into a great defender. But he's got fantastic speed, and now I'm not sure how big Cam Holding is, but Jesse Campbell's not a big guy, but he has been, for I think the last two or three years, the best transitional player on the Toronto Rock. So I think these guys are also, both of them are just fantastic athletes in unbelievable condition, like I assume most guys will at this level, but these guys are just supreme. So I think Canada is expecting big things for them, short stick defenders, and also having the ability to stay on the transition and start the fast break.
It's such an interesting role because, you know, it's one of the things that I think was a misnomer for Canadian players, particularly Canadian midfielders, as they came into, you know, Kyle's across, which is that they were very offensive-oriented and couldn't play defense. And my comment was, you know, so many of these guys have played tons of on-ball defense in their box lacrosse days. And so a lot of these two-way midfielders, a lot of these offensive midfielders are good defensive players as well, guys like Cam Flint and Jeremy Noble and others. Here you've got two short stick specialists that, you know, you can rely on and then spell when needed with some of these primarily offensive players. It's definitely, and that's kind of getting back to the comment that I made at the top, which is that, you know, in many, many ways, this is, a pure field lacrosse team made of guys who have indoor experience. And in some cases are certainly, you know, indoor stars. It's not meant to undersell that. It's just to say that, you know, in the way that previously there had been guys who were making a transition to the outdoor game, that's not the case. And I think that it's important for USA fans to realize that, particularly depending on how it shakes out tonight. And, you know, just kind of getting to down to the last couple of spots where I think that there are some interesting issues. You know, Jeff Snyder is a guy who, you know, over the course of his career, I'm sure that you've gotten very familiar. And you know, if there's anything about his reputation that is impossible to miss, it is how up he gets for a fight. And I mean that in every definition of the term fight. So, you know, here he is coming off of some injury issues, hasn't played but one game in the MLL this summer, but still, you know, a dominant faceoff specialist when he is suited up in both arenas. What is your expectation for Jeff Snyder over the next week and a half?
Well, I think intensity is the word to describe Jeff Snyder, and I assume that his health is fine. Otherwise, they wouldn't have taken him. But, he was a big, huge reason that Canada won the gold medal in 2006. And, his face-offs, and I think, you know, the Americans made a mistake in not, picking a pure face-off guy to go against him. I don't think they thought it was as important as it turned out to be. But, yes, if Snyder is on and winning, that's a huge advantage to Canada. I don't know how well he matches up against, the Canadian guys, Grenly and Eck. But, I think the key with Snyder is I spoke to Gary Gate. Gary Gate has coached Snyder. He says, you know, Snyder sometimes can win 90% of the face-offs, but, he's got to get off the field. He is so skilled sometimes that Snyder wants to stay on the field, and he's not a bad goal scorer, and he will take some balls straight to the net, and he's got enough skill. So I think he's a Fogel who doesn't always want to be a straight Fogel, but I think he will buy into their program. You know, I guess what Gary Gates said to me once was that if he wins 90% of the faceoffs and then, takes it to the net, then loses it 30% of the times, he becomes a 60% faceoff guy. But I think in a situation like this, playing for Team Canada, he will know that, you know, he's got the best players in the world on the field. So unless Snyder has a chance to take it straight to the net, he'll pass that ball off and get off. And I think, he'll buy into the program that they want, because they want him to be that, whatever, it won't be 90%, but if he can, 70%, 60%, anything over 50 would be great for them. But I think Snyder's got the intensity that he's going to play an important role for Canada. And I really think that as it was in 2006, how we do on face-offs will really affect whether we can, win or not against the U.S. Because, let's face it, Iroquois will be good as well, but it'll probably boil down to Canada and the U.S.
And I didn't want to pigeonhole you as the Canadian specialist. We're talking about Canada, U.S. on the eve of their opening game, and it's an interesting wrinkle to the tournament to start with that. And certainly, it's different from the 2010 tournament where, there's an expectation that there's going to be a gap below the Iroquois, which, is something that we can get to in a second. But it would be interesting to start the tournament with what both teams expect to be their most competitive game and then play out the rest of the Blue Division and not see each other for a week or you know, 8 days or whatever. So definitely getting things started with a bang. But the presence of the Iroquois represents a second large challenge in the coming days for both the U.S. and Canada. And I suppose, you know, just to kind of get you out on this one, what are your thoughts and expectations? I mean, I think, you know, everybody is happy that the Canadian, or excuse me, that the Iroquois are in Denver back in the tournament and able to, you know, represent not only their game, their style of play, all this burgeoning talent that exists within that community, but obviously also the you know, the roots of the game that, you know, for so many of us have given us a profession, a livelihood, and something that we enjoy so dearly. But as it relates to, you know, how familiar you've come with some of these guys that, you know, do play a lot of indoor, and certainly a lot of guys that have generated large headlines in the field game, particularly, you know, the Thompsons, what's your thought on the Iroquois heading into this tournament, and where would you say your expectations lie for the types of games they're going to give Canada and the U.S.?
I still think Canada and U.S. will be the stronger teams, but I think if either one of them is not on their A games, the Iroquois will sneak up and steal a victory. And you know, and they are a super talented team. I mean, you know, you mentioned the Thompsons, you got guys like Cody James, and just, you know, right on down the line, they're so talented. I still think they are a small step behind Canada and the U.S., but you got to think that sooner or later they're going to make that step. And, you know, we probably saw it in the U-19 championships, you know, when, you know, they beat the U.S. in a game, and, you know, they didn't win it, but obviously, you know, they won one of the round robin games against the U.S., and they played some great lacrosse. And the great thing about them, too, is when you watch them play, you think this is the way lacrosse is meant to be played. I mean, just watching the stick skills, you know, on the natives is just fantastic, and I think it's great for lacrosse that, you know, this is a native game, and that we see, you know, natives today still representing the game so well and playing such a pure game and playing it almost, well, definitely as a religious experience. You know, they always say it's the creator's game, and when they play, they're playing to honor the creator. So I think they have the ability to sneak up and win. I still expect them to be competing for the bronze medal, but I would not be shocked if in one of these years that they snuck in there to, you know, get into the gold medal game. And I wouldn't be upset if they did either. I think it would be great for lacrosse.
No doubt about it. I remember, you know, talking to a couple of guys in the Canadian lacrosse program, and they made the comment, the Iroquois bring the wooden sticks for the Canada game. So that's definitely one I've got circled on my calendar. Not going to miss it by any for any cause. Well, Brian Shanahan, this was excellent. I think that our listeners really learned a lot, and hopefully are better prepared to watch tonight's hopefully exciting nail biting end to end first showdown. Well, presumably first showdown of what will be two in this FIL World Championship. We know that you're heading out to Denver next week. We know that you're going to be playing, so make sure you stay loose, stay hydrated. Hopefully the altitude doesn't get to you too bad, and we look forward to catching you out in Denver.
Yeah, thanks very much, Terry. And I guess we better remember the last two World Championships, the winner of the Canada-U.S. game in the round robin ended up losing in the gold championship. So I don't know if that's going to become a jinx factor for these teams tonight. You know, maybe both teams will want to lose a close one.
No doubt. We'll keep an eye on that one for sure. I've been thinking about that. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know how you as a coach can approach a game and say, you know, there's a benefit to losing this one, but there's no question that it's been the case. So, yeah. Definitely something to keep an eye on.
Okay. Thanks very much, Terry. It's great.
Inside the Cross Podcast.